From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM. First of all, happy birthday to Diamond Nunu. I don't make this up. Huntington Beach, California. And tonight, events that could change your life and the world. We're going to start in a moment for the next couple hours with Craig Hewlett. Here's what's happening. At least 16 people killed, more than 200 injured when a United Nations-run school used as a shelter came under fire in Gaza. Palestinian families were in the school fleeing Israel's offensive against Hamas militants. Now, in the past 16 days of fighting there, 797 Palestinians, 33 Israelis have been killed. And in Jerusalem, massive West Bank clashes reported, leaving two Palestinians dead there. Thousands protesting against Israel's Gaza operation. They were throwing rocks, firebombs, fireworks at Israeli security forces at a checkpoint. Now, something is really happening strangely in the skies. First of all, March 8th, we have the missing Malaysia Airlines Flight 370, 239 people aboard. Nobody knows where that jet is. And then, of course, over the Ukraine, Malaysia Flight 17 shot down, 298 people dead. A Taiwanese plane yesterday crashes, 48 people dead. And now this, the wreck of a plane that disappeared with 116 people on board, all dead, on a flight from Algiers, has been found in Mali. The army said the plane operated by Algeria's national airline had crashed 30 miles from a border. Air traffic controllers lost contact with the plane early after pilots reported severe storms. James Sanders, of course, author of the downing of TWA Flight 800. Jim, what the heck is going on here in the skies?
Well, in terms of Taiwan, I think that was clearly weather. The one over Africa, maybe way too soon to say, but that is a definite possibility. You're just back to the Malaysian planes. I don't think there's any possibility that the Ukrainian separatists, I believe they call them, shot that plane down. And that seems to have just been a really dumb thing that is only temporarily going to slow Putin down, in my opinion.
I think so, too. And of course, we still don't know what happened to the Malaysian Flight 370.
Yeah, 370. I should have said something about that. I'm sorry.
That's right.
I firmly believe it was taken, and it's a use it or lose it, and I believe that we neutralized it in time for whatever it was going to be used for.
Now, if you're about ready to get on a plane, Jim, to go fly someplace, would you be a little leery or would you still feel safe?
I haven't flown in a good long time, even though I fly free, or almost free, on American Airlines. It's cost me $10 to go anywhere in the world they go, and I haven't done it in a good long time.
So does that mean you wouldn't go?
Not right now, no. I would have to have a really compelling reason to want to get somewhere to do it by air.
Okay.
That's just me. Yeah.
I'm going to Denver this weekend to tape our Beyond Belief television program, so here we go again. The number of Americans filing new claims for unemployment benefits fell to the lowest level in 8.5 years last week. Some suggest the labor market recovery is gaining traction. Maybe people out there in the unemployment force just have simply given up. And another report, of course, showing a sharp decline in new home sales in June. Economists cautioning against reading too much into the drop there. And while the actual number of patients discovered is low, 305, there is a major worry about cases of contagious and deadly superbugs known as CRE increasing fivefold in community hospitals from 2008 to 2012 in the southeastern part of the United States, according to a study. The worry is that the CRE infections are underreported and threaten healthcare facilities nationwide. They are antibiotic resistant. Well, as we've been reporting for years, And as the mainstream media is now beginning to pick up, the sun unleashed two massive clouds of plasma that barely missed us a few years ago. It would have been the most powerful in at least 150 years. And according to physicist Daniel Baker of the University of Colorado, if it had hit us, we'd still be picking up the pieces. Now, I've been talking with that with William Forstgen, author of One Second After, for a long time now. It's good to know that mainstream's picking up. You know, our campaign to get the grid insulated might work, William.
You know, if folks look back on your podcast from 2 years ago, you might recall we talked about this exact incident only days after it happened.
Exactly.
Wondering why mainstream was not reporting it then.
Why are they now starting to pick this up?
Well, you know, it struck me. In fact, it was your staff today that tipped me off that there was an article. Imagine if we were on a cruise and then 2 years later somebody got a hold of us and said, hey, you know, we almost missed an iceberg 2 years ago. Don't worry about it. I can't explain to you, George, why they're picking it up 2 years later. I wish they had been reporting it when it happened. And that article you cited pointed out, we stand a fair probability that there'll be another event of that level in the very near future. Let's be on top of it rather than reporting it 2 years afterwards.
Yeah. William, I had a few email volleys back and forth with Joe Farah from WorldNet Daily. And we're going to chat next week, but he's on board to help us push getting the grid insulated, too.
You are getting the word out, and I thank God for that, because it seems like mainstream media is not.
We're not going to stop. William, thanks. Have yourself a good weekend.
God bless. Thank you.
A man in Florida apparently got a dose of road rage karma when police say he was run over by his own pickup truck after getting out to bang on another driver's window. It happened in Gainesville, Florida. A 48-year-old man had been drinking. He drove into a vehicle, stopped at a red light. He got out of the truck without putting it in park and began banging on the window of a woman's car. Well, she was frightened and drove away. There was nothing holding his truck in place. It rolled over him. He's okay, charged with a DUI. What's going on in the skies these days? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what's up?
Yeah, good evening, George, and as always, thanks for the wonderful airtime to bring some interesting information to our audience. It's been a landmark day. We surpassed 1,000 reports this morning for the month of July, which is almost a record. We have a week to go, of course. To put that in some kind of perspective, 250 a month used to be a normal amount, 8 or 10 a day. And we're getting, about 30 a day. So It's very unusual, very heavy load of reports. And just this morning as well, we passed the 100,000 case mark.
Jeez.
Of the cases in our database. And we'll have all of the new cases posted later, probably either tonight or early tomorrow morning sometime. Been a very, very busy month. But it's ironic you're headed to Denver this weekend. Of the two or three cases that I wanted to feature tonight, two of them are from the Denver area.
Oh, really?
One from northwestern Denver, the Westminster area. On Monday of this week, the 21st of July, a woman was out walking. Sounds like a very responsible businesswoman out walking, and she saw what she thought was either a police helicopter or a military helicopter pursuing a very strange white light. The helicopter caught up to it, and the two then slowed down, and they continued in a straight path and went behind trees and a local apartment complex. Have no idea what that object was, except what makes it so interesting is 3 hours later in Larkspur, Colorado, which is, I guess, just south of Denver, maybe 20 or 30 miles, a woman was awakened by a very loud sound. She looked out her window and saw an almond-shaped craft pursued by six, maybe seven, white lights on the tail that turned red and followed the object as it headed towards the military academy, Air Force Academy.
Jeez.
To the south of her location.
That's not ours.
Not ours for sure, George, and I don't know what's going on, but the final case I'd like to cite is probably the granddaddy of the month. on Tuesday of this week, Tuesday night at 21:20 hours, 9:20 p.m., a gentleman who's a former U.S. Air Force crew chief aboard aircraft saw two, he called them gray pewter disks, being pursued by an Apache helicopter in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I've talked to this gentleman on three occasions, very, very solid witness. Both he and his wife saw the helicopter. He saw the pewter disks. I'm going to interview him at length sometime tomorrow, but a very, very dramatic sighting. He was thunderstruck by what he saw, has no idea what those disks are. I'll probably have more information in the future. I'll share this case again, perhaps, with the Coast audience, but a very, very dramatic sighting. We will have that case, a report both from him and his wife, on our website tomorrow afternoon.
Super. Peter, thanks. Peter's website, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. It is called The Hydra of Carnage by Craig Hewlett, and it couldn't be more poignant than today. So much is happening around the world that affects all of us, and we might not even realize it yet. It might get too late before we do. Craig is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. Craig Hewlett with us. He's been a speechwriter, special assistant for special projects for the retired Congressman Jack Metcalf. He's been a consultant to law enforcement. He has, of course, been a regular here on Coast to Coast AM. And I couldn't think of a better time to have Craig on with us for a few hours to talk about these world events that truly, Craig, will affect all of us, but we may not know it until it's too late. How are you?
I'm doing very well, and I'll repeat what the previous guest said. And I think your audience should really seriously take note of it. I really appreciate you giving me any airtime whatsoever whenever you can. I think we will continue to be lied to. The media will continue to ignore issues that are of incredible importance to the American people. And I believe that you and a handful of other talk show hosts around the country are about the only hope left to find out what's really going on in the country. Unless you're prepared to act like I do and read the foreign press, Muslim press, British, German, French press, read everything from other countries that are good source material, and then study journals that nobody could possibly, you know, even want to read. They're so bloody boring. But the point is that you are not being told the truth about any of the things that really matter. And I think that's the most disturbing thing that's taken place in the last 8 years in our country and in the last few years. It really has accelerated to the point of embarrassment.
You're right, Craig. Like this labor report that shows that unemployment claims are down, that's because people who are unemployed are fed up. And they're not applying anymore.
Of course, they don't count people that aren't looking for jobs. And they've already admitted that 90 million, now it's over 90 million Americans. That was a six-month-old statistic. 90 million Americans are permanently unemployed or considered unemployable and will never work again. 90 million adults. And so whatever unemployment figures you're listening to and listening to the White House or the media in their polling or their kind of reporting, I don't listen to anything in the mainstream media anymore. Absolutely nothing. Not if it's American-based out of the six corporations that control 90% of everything you see, read, and hear. I have no use for the American media, and I have no use for the White House or the United States government any longer.
You are a fighter. You're a patriot. What keeps you going?
I have three grandchildren. I have a son. I didn't know him for a very long time. I was one of those bad Vietnam dads.
Ah.
I probably still am a bad Vietnam dad. Maybe that's what's wrong.
At least you admit it.
But, you know, it's hard to look at your country the way I have since I was a young man. You know, it didn't start with Vietnam. It started what I learned when I was in country in Vietnam. I saw things that were demoralizing, they were wrong, they were just hideous, and the war was a complete lie. So while I was a combat vet and I served the troops I stood next to, I did not serve my country. So when people say, you know, thank you for your service, this sentimental claptrap that started in mainstream media, always thank a veteran for his service. I say, don't thank me. I'm one of the lucky ones that are alive.
That's right.
Thank the ones that are dead.
You got that right. You know, tonight, as I was taking notes all day, Greg, about what to talk with you about, I took notes on the Malaysian Flight 370. And I went, no, I'll talk about the Malaysian Flight 17. And then this Algerian plane hits. And then the situation in the Ukraine. And then Israel and Hamas. And I'm saying, my God, I've never seen a planet so upside down in all my life. What's going on?
Well, I think what's really going on, and this is the best way I can explain it, and I appreciate the ability to talk to an audience that is willing to look outside of the box, get outside of your process of thought, and understand that there's things going on you may never truly understand. And you have a government now, clearly, that has no intent to tell you the truth about the most important things that affect you. There's no interest in that. They don't care if we're going to get hit by a comet. They're not going to tell you. They're not going to tell you.
No.
They're not going to tell you that the plane is shot down by anybody but the Russians as long as we're in the Ukraine right now. The West is in the Ukraine because they've made deals for oil and gas with Chevron and Shell Oil. And they made the deals just weeks before the so-called democratic regime was overthrown by the West. And we put a puppet regime into power. And now we're talking like the puppet regime is legitimate. And we haven't put a legitimate regime in power anywhere in the world. And yet the American people will buy anything. We'll take anything at its face value and just go, oh, well, it's the bad Russians. You know, and I don't like Putin. I don't like Putin at all.
You know what's so bizarre, too? The entire Iraqi story has fallen off the map.
Isn't that amazing? Iraq is on fire. Afghanistan is on fire. Opium production is at the highest level in galactic history, and people are dying both in Russia and the United States from heroin overdoses directly attributed to Afghan opium, and we're guarding the opium fields. U.S. military personnel, I have hundreds of photographs sent to me from vets in the field in Iraq, sending pictures. Hi, Craig. This is Bob. Here I am guarding the poppy fields again.
So let's start with this, Craig. You're with me for a couple hours tonight. Let's start with this. We've got thousands and thousands of truck drivers listening to this show. We've got people who are stay-at-home parents, men and women, listening to this show. We've got police officers listening tonight. We've got hospital workers. We've got security guards who are watching buildings with their radios on, listening to us tonight. Nobody has been affected yet by these world events that we keep seeing plastered on television or we hear on the radio. At what point do we get pulled in on this, and it really starts to hit home?
Okay. Well, you couldn't have set that up any better. I just wrote an article, and I haven't written a lot in the last few years, but I wrote an article. It's about 5 pages long. It's the introduction to a 100-page PDF file that I just had my producer post on our website. Its title is a little odd, and it may not seem very important to you at the time, but this, I think, leads up to everything else we might discuss tonight. I got 2 documents in the mail. I have associates, people that work for me. I don't pay them. Actually, they pay me, and then they volunteer to work for me.
And they leak you stuff.
And they supply me with extraordinary material. Well, I received 3 files from the IMF, the World Bank, and the OECD. These are brand new documents. The public has had no notice of them. They're internal documents. They're not classified. They're just, you'll never read them. But the gist of it, when I read them, I couldn't believe what I was reading, that they're prepared to go to this extent and keep it from the American people. But our government is turning to the IMF and the World Bank to address our debt problem, the United States government's debt
problem. Our trillions of dollars of debt.
Trillions of dollars to the point where any decent economist or accountant will tell you there's no such thing as $20 trillion. It doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
Okay, a computer says it's there as a blip in the screen, but it doesn't exist, not even in paper currency. It's just an electronic dashboard that's blinking in your face saying $20 trillion. But The only reason you and I are even functioning is because, and please beg my difference. I'm getting old. Beg my difference. I don't mean to insult the country, but my countrymen, my brothers and sisters, you're as dumb as a box of rocks.
Stay with us on that thought, Craig. We'll be back with you in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Back in a moment with Craig Hewlett as we talk about the Hydra of Carnage. It's all around us. And about that, we'll take some calls with him next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, we're starting a new feature for you Coast Insiders. And Lex has already posted some information up on the coasttocoastam.com website in the highlight reel. It's an introduction to Coast Insiders. So go take a look at that. Welcome back to Coast, Craig Hewlett with us. Corks, Craig, when you say that we're dumb as a bunch of rocks, it's not this audience.
Well, I tried to apologize before I said it. Sometimes the only way this kind of information is able to be swallowed by people is if you just happen to insult them first, because then they'll get angry enough to listen.
But, well, they listen to you, believe me.
But here's a brief quote from these papers, just one paragraph. Even after one of the most severe multi-year crises on record in the advanced economies, the received wisdom in policy circles clings to the notion that high-income countries like America are completely different from the emerging market counterparts. The current phase of official policy approach is predicated on the assumption that debt sustainability can be achieved through a mix of austerity, forbearance, and growth. Now, that's from an IMF paper, from an OECD paper. They state, and I won't go on and quote from that, that they're expecting to have riots and civil disturbances as the European nations try to apply those very measures of austerity, forbearance, and growth, which is not achievable, and the people suffer. Well, America is being looked at a little bit differently because in these documents, because these are American-led institutions, even though they're an international governing organization, part of the Hydra that I describe in my book, they're an international governing organization. The IMF, the World Bank, NATO, all of these institutions are the new world order you're all waiting to see happen.
That's right. Now, does the IMF and the World Bank, do they dwarf the Federal Reserve?
Financially, they do not dwarf the Federal Reserve. But the idea of transferring that kind of power to the World Bank, the IMF, and the OECD, and the World Trade Organization has always been on the front burner of creating this global corporate empire. It was outlined in a book by a national security advisor called The Strategy of Interdependence. And in it, he suggested you build this empire, this regime, by instituting governing bodies throughout the world dispersed so no one body can be attacked, eliminated, and would bring down the system. And there's no titular head. It's called an acephalous organization. So you can't remove the head and kill the beast. You can remove a piece of it, but like a spider web, you don't attack the whole thing, so it can continue. The IMF and the World Bank are destined to evolve into a world central bank, replacing the Federal Reserve Central Bank and the Central Bank of Europe, the European Central Bank of the European Union. And then we're expecting the BRICS group movement of China, Russia, South Africa, Brazil, and India. They've already created their own central bank, a global one. They've only given it $100 billion, and it's backed by gold. But, you know, it's a growing threat to the Federal Reserve. But the whole point is these things will all be merged into international organizations that have no relationship to nation states. And that's why what you're hearing, you're going to start hearing, is language that to me is medieval. This is medieval language, but they're bringing it out because it actually is the correct language. When they refer to this debt structure of America as a nation state and developing and emerging market economies, they're referring to it as sovereign debt.
Is that why, Craig, we see things like this incredible illegal immigration into the United States? I got to tell you, I feel sorry for these people, for parents to let their children loose in Central America and flood across the border to us. It's absolutely astounding. But we don't seem to be, as a government, doing much yet to stop this.
Well, we have no intention to stop
it. No.
We
it's
have an
part
intention.
Of the plan, isn't it?
No, it's the plan is to absorb them into the economy, because there are going to be very few high-level, high-wage-paying jobs for Americans. Like I said, 90 million. That's a one-third of the adult population will never work again in America. They're sitting on their butts right now, and in California and Colorado, smoking marijuana. And
legally,
they're not working, and they don't ever intend to work again. They will be on the dole forever. We also have an entire generation, and actually, it's my generation in part to blame, that we feel like we get a job in the Forest Service or the Post Office. We work for 20 years and we retire. We've got six kids. We don't put them through college, but we retire at 40, 43 years old, and then we sit on our butt and draw retirement pay until we're 92. And then we actually have the audacity to tell other members of the community that are out working and paying taxes, I paid into it. I'm just getting what's mine. Well, no, do the math. These people will collect 10, 20 times more than they ever paid into it. And this allows to go on. But there's a reason the government allows these things.
I think an early retirement, Craig, is an early death. I've always believed that.
Well, I don't intend to retire simply because I prefer making war. I don't have any sense that if I were to stop doing what I'm doing and working with my client base and my colleagues throughout the nation about these things, I think I know what would happen. I would just keel over and die.
Do you see some of these major things happening before the 2016 election or after?
Actually, yes. This IMF report is about the sovereign debt crisis. When they use the word sovereign, I mean it's medieval in the sense that they're talking about the sovereign like a monarch.
Yeah.
Or a global leader of a new kingdom. That's the sovereign. That's where that name is supposed to be applied. But they're calling America's debt the sovereign debt, thus making you and I the subjects of that sovereign. But here's the rub. This is brand new. Now, they've already done this in Cyprus as a test run.
That was a disaster.
But it worked. Yes, they flooded the streets. They rioted. But the riots were suppressed. They brought order to Cyprus. And the people of Cyprus are living with it.
That's right. They
now,
have
the language.
They marched to the tune.
And the language is brilliant. The IMF language, the OECD's language, the World Bank, they refer to it as financial repression in dealing with the sovereign debt crisis. Now, when you listen to that, you go, okay, financial repression, you're going to help the government get rid of its trillions of dollars in debt? Yes, because here's the definition. It includes directed lending to government by captive domestic audiences.
What are they going to do, Craig, to keep the finger on the civil unrest, to keep it down from exploding?
Well, first of all, you're not going to see this happen. We have a thing in place that's been there for 30 years called bank holidays. They can call a bank holiday whenever they choose. It'll usually be late on a Thursday. People will go to the bank on Friday. Banks won't open up until Tuesday. The financial repression they're talking about to cover the government's debt includes directed lending to the government by captive domestic audiences. Who do you think that is? That's your pension fund.
That's right.
Your savings account. That's your 401k.
They're going to capture all of it.
They'll take. Now, right now, the IMF is saying, in general terms, in most countries, like emerging countries, 10% is all that is necessary. You take 10% of everybody in the country's sovereign wealth.
Just gone.
It's taken. Over that weekend, it's out of your savings account, your 401k, your pension fund. It just disappears.
If you got $10,000, you got $9,000 on Tuesday.
Exactly. But that's only the theoretical amount that they did in Cyprus, and it caused riots in the street. Now, they could do that before Obama leaves office, like the year before. They would do it over a bank holiday. This would solve the debt crisis, and they could do it simultaneously by raising interest rates to create inflation, simultaneously because inflation is a tax.
A double whammy.
Now, financial repression, they admit that's a tax. They go, oh, we know it's a tax. It's a redistributive channel. A redistributive channel is how they put it. They know it's a tax. They're taking from you and giving it to the sovereign because you're no longer the sovereign. Get it? You are not a self-governed democracy. We're an oligarchy.
So while this is going on, what about the other world events that are happening, like Ukraine, like the Israeli situation with the Hamas?
Aren't they beautiful distractions?
They are unbelievable distractions.
And they're also deadly ones because, you know, we're playing with a man named Vladimir who is not afraid of America, and the Russian people are not afraid to fight. They're not afraid. They'll enlist. You go to war with Russia, 1 million young Russian men will enlist for Mother Russia. Can you say the same thing about America going to war in Ukraine?
Not that much. Nope.
No, sir.
Nope.
No.
In fact,
our troops are already wore out. Some of them have done 9 combat tours.
Oh, yeah. We can't do another conflict. We can't do it.
But that doesn't mean they won't try.
Would Putin literally push the button, nuke button?
No, I don't believe he would because he doesn't need to. His concern is to stop this global regime of economic interdependence that doesn't include Russia, China, India, South Africa, and Brazil.
Good point. Why aren't they letting them in the club?
Well, that, to me, has always been an answer of who we think we are as an oligarchy, who the men like Dick Cheney, Wolfowitz, Rumsfeld, George Bush Sr., who do those men, the governing elite of our oligarchy, the heads of the largest banks and the largest oil, pharmaceutical, mining corporations, oil, who do these people really think they are? Well, look, I didn't pop into politics by accident. When I left the military, I realized that I had no place as an employed person. I couldn't take orders. That was my real problem. I don't like taking orders.
I know that.
So I became self-employed at 22 years old. I was one of the youngest CEOs in California. And I had as clients the largest corporations. I went for the money. I truly was a capitalist pig.
It worked for you.
It did. I went along with it with Weyerhaeuser, Exxon, Friendswood Development, U.S. Homes. The largest corporations in the world were my clients.
What woke you up?
I saw the boardrooms. I saw the war room. And I saw the distinction that was so similar in the corporate structure at that level and the Pentagon, the military structure I saw when I was in Vietnam.
Most people, Craig, would have continued to take the cash.
That's true. And a lot of people did tell me, don't. You know, take the money, move to Switzerland. But I have a streak in me. I don't know where it comes from. I think I do. I have an uncle who lived by the code, and he didn't do that well. He didn't do as well as me. But I have an uncle that I guess I'm a lot like him. And I don't have a problem. And I do this with my clients. One of the things I serve in my client base is if they get in trouble, like if their company, somebody tries to take their company away from them, they call on Hewlett. They laughingly call me a 10-gauge. I come to their aid, and I will do what's necessary to help my clients, like a good lawyer would do. But I don't play by legal rules.
When you were with Metcalf, God rest his soul, were you a hot potato for him?
How did
he handle you?
He was a sweet man. He really, truly was a genuine Christian, Jesus-believing, decent, good man. He was the kind of man that would open the door for Janet Reno. Now, me, I'd shut the door on Janet Reno. But Jack came to my lectures in disguise with his chief of staff for years, and finally he said, I want to hire him. Because everything he's saying is true. I know all of it's true, every bit of it, as a senior congressman. So I went to work for him for special projects, and some of the projects were Agent Orange.
Jeez, yeah.
Gulf War illness, the Federal Reserve System and the World Trade organization was just coming. The World Trade Organization was evolving out of GATT, and they were taking a vote on it to vote for the World Trade Organization, which was always the goal of the GATT Accords. And he knew I would be viciously against it as a violation of the U.S. Constitution. So I wrote him a 1,000-page paper with documentation breaking down the proposal and destroying the arguments. Then I wrote him a speech. He gave the speech once to three people. He gave it twice to 18 people. Pretty soon, he was giving the speech for the 20th time. There were over 300 congressmen and senators in the room. But we lost. It was a hell of a fight, but we lost because there's no way you can fight GE, Exxon, Mobil, Goldman Sachs.
Wow, they're too big.
They're too big. And they came to him. They came to him personally. The lobbyists in Washington State came to him from Redmond, Washington, for Weyerhaeuser, for Microsoft, for Boeing, and they all showed up in limousines at the same time and told him he was going to vote in favor of the WTO and that they wanted him to stop giving that speech.
Do you remember the movie Network?
Oh, yes.
That classic section that Peter Finch, Howard Beale, said, where people just want to be left alone. Leave me alone with my telly and my toaster and my radial tires. And just leave me alone.
And what was I having Jack say on the floor of Congress? There is no United States of America. There is only Weyerhaeuser. There is only Boeing, Goldman Sachs, and Chevron. America as a nation state was the beginning of the statement of his speech. It's in the Hydra. I published his entire speech.
Eisenhower knew that, too.
And point blank, the first thing I said was a quote from a Yale economics professor saying, America is a nation state. It's over. It doesn't exist any longer. Technology has taken it to a global scale. There is no America, Russia. There is just Boeing, Exxon, Weyerhaeuser.
So
these are the new ruling elite.
The country I knew, 1963, Kennedy gets killed. I'm 13 years old, Craig. It changes. For me, the perception of the United States changes after that. Never believed that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. Believed we were being lied to and manipulated. And it never stopped. Can we change this? Can we win?
That's actually another part of this paper I just published. After I go through this IMF, World Bank, OECD, how they're going to do this, how they're going to take your money to support the global regime out of Washington, D.C. The people that benefit will be all the congressmen, senators, and staffers, and all of the employees of the federal government, and state and local to some degree. But when they prop that government regime back up, they are expecting the American people to riot. They're expecting you to go into the streets because they admit, there's a poll that I published, and they're admitting in one of the documents I supply that the Pentagon is preparing for that day of crises when the American people realize that the government has had to take control of their financial future.
And they expect it. They know then what's going to happen.
They know precisely what's going to happen. That's why they're making no real effort right now to ban guns. They don't want to trigger something before the fact. They want to get accomplished first, this transfer of wealth. The financial repression has to come first. Then they save the government, the sovereign state. You and I are left out in the cold as subjects, and some of you will be bloody well broke.
How many people would simply say, okay, so they took 10%. At least I paid my dues to the company store.
Okay, we'll do the math. Now, you've heard me say this dozens of times.
You can't pay it off.
It's one of the reasons Jack hired me. I used to open my lectures in Seattle with, if you don't do demographics, demographics will do you. Do the math.
You can't pay it off.
Not only can you not, do you want to end up, your dream of being in the middle class is based on your debt structure. You don't understand. When they're calling it a sovereign debt, they're saying that the dollar in your pocket, the Federal Reserve note, is the sovereign's note. It's the sovereign's note. It's like the king, the monarch's note. It's his. It belongs to him. It is not yours. is yours only if they allow you to have it to the degree that they allow. And one day they're going to say, no, we need 10 or 20% so the government can keep functioning.
We're coming back, Craig. We're going to take phone calls with you and continue chatting. My, oh, my, oh, my.